And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Hey, have a guest today. He's written a couple of outstanding books, and one of them I have here in my hand. The other one I have read, and it's here somewhere in my library. Both of them are very worthy books, and we're going to tell you about both of them today. And you just might want to order both of these books, one from us. Then I'll ask my guest where to get the other one, but because they're both very worthy books that have some very fascinating information. The first book is entitled Exploding Middle East Myths, 15 Years Fighting Zionist Propaganda. The author is Greg Felton. He also is author of another book that I read this year entitled The Host and the Parasite. A little mysterious name there, and I'm going to ask Greg in a moment how he came up with that name. I think I know, but I want Greg to explain it to you. We'll put him on the griddle. He seems like he's able to withstand some heat. After all, he has written a book that I think is quite interesting, Exploding Middle East Myths. If you can do that, well, then you're not too worried about having the burner turned up high under you. In fact, I first learned about Greg Felton, who is, by the way, an investigative journalist who specializes in the Middle East, but also Canadian politics. He's a Canadian. We forgive him for that, especially down here in Texas where I'm from, you know, down here in South America, as they call it. But in any case, I first learned about Greg because there was like an interchange going on. Evidently, Greg Felton had written something, probably a little bit like these two books I'm just telling you about. And he was just being skewered by these Zionist people. And then he answered back. I guess it was like one of those chat pages where, you know, he could, and he pretty well gave as well as he took. But of course, his was the only side in my mind that made sense. They tried to, but they couldn't quite do it. They didn't have the facts on their side. Hey, Greg Felton, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Welcome. Thanks for having me on, Tex. Glad to be here.
Well, you've done a great job in these books. There are a couple things I would disagree with you about, but, you know, I'm a Christian evangelist, so I want to belabor you with those things, on air at least. We may disagree on those things, but one thing I tell you I agree with is your heart for telling the truth about Israel, about Zionism. And that must mean you have paid, as a journalist, a little bit of a price for that truth-telling.
Well, yes, actually, it's been hard to find work in the mainstream press because of it. It's actually been impossible. But, however, if you're a journalist today and you haven't offended somebody, you aren't doing your job. Many people in the media are sort of willing to put out press release news and sort of pander to the dictates of their corporate owners. There are very few people willing to go out and actually tell the stories before something happens, to do the investigation before the event. And yes, I have paid a fair price for it, but, you know, I think Winston Churchill said, I'd rather be right than prime minister.
I'd rather be right than prime minister. Okay. Well, I think you're right in a lot of things here. And first of all, let's look at your book. Let's look at Host and the Parasite first, could we? Now, the title alone is sort of arresting, would you say? The Host and the Parasite. You know, a man named William Porker Yockey. Sort of a classic book. Didn't sell many copies, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a great book. Called Imperium, back in the early 60s, in which he came to the conclusion that Jews as a whole, he didn't necessarily mean everyone, were culture disruptors. Are culture distorters. And he said because of that, because they refuse to assimilate, but as the Apostle Paul said in the Bible, they are contrary to all men, that they're, you know, he didn't use the word parasite, but he did say they're culture distorters. They will distort the culture, damage it, and very grievously. But is that sort of what you're talking about with the host and the parasite?
Well, kind of, but not exactly.
Uh-huh.
I had to come up with a title that did respect to the three main themes in my book. The book, it actually interweaves three main plots. One of them is the degeneration of the United States into fascism. Another one is the wars of the Middle East and how Israel and the United States fomented them. Another one is the September the 11th attack and how that shows the crowning achievement of the Zionist occupation of America. And I was having trouble coming up with a title that didn't, you know, sacrifice one of those themes to another. So I don't know, I must have been just daydreaming one day, and I thought, I was thinking about the parasitic control that Israel has over America, and I thought in medical terms and the disease terms, my God, a host and a parasite, the parasite consumes the host. And I think it worked. And I think it is probably the perfect title for the book because it describes precisely the relationship of Israel to the United States. And it shows the effect of it. Because a parasite that goes out of control, that doesn't have any sense of proportion as parasites don't, will end up killing the host.
Mm.
And this is what we're seeing right now with the massive banking failure with, I think, bailout figures, I think, have managed to be in the estimates of $26 trillion. That's the last figure that I've seen. The United States is now a laughingstock of the world. It's being humiliated, browbeaten, and generally emasculated by this occupation army that has basically taken over the country. It's like having cancer in one part of your body and having it metastasize to your bones. Because once it gets into your bones, you can't get rid of it. You're going to die. Mm. Now, as far as Jews being culture disruptors, I think that's a little harsh. Yes, Jews tend to keep to themselves, and they have their own little cultural enclaves. But I think rather than focus on a people categorically like that, I think it might be useful to look at how the religion sort of allows Jews the license either to be law-abiding citizens of a country or to be disruptors. I mean, religion can always be used abusively by anybody. And I think we should focus on the differences between Jews on the one hand or what we might call Jews or Zionist Jews on the other. Because until Zionism came along, the Jews in Europe were basically part of the cultural fabric of the various empires that lived there. They enriched American culture. They gave us great learning and humor. So I think it's wrong to denigrate a whole religious group.
Yeah, well, I would disagree with you on that. There are a lot of very dangerous religions, and when you get to the Jewish Talmud, which says the best of the Gentiles kill, and says that a rabbi once argued with God and defeated him in the argument, and that if you slap a Jew, you're literally slapping the face of God. I think when people say they're God, we got problems, Craig, with that kind of a people, because if they take that in real life and utilize that false premise, they can do very horrible things to people, and that's why they're doing horrible things to people all over the world with their Israeli besant. So I would disagree with you. I think just disrupting the culture is not as bad at all as you say. They're like an occupying army, and I would propose that you're really saying they're a enemy. They are a parasite. I think that's a lot better than just being a distorter or disruptor myself. But back to the religion, you know, the United States has been made up primarily of Christians since its foundation. Not that it was founded by super Christians or anything like that. I'm not going to try to debate that with you. Some would, but I simply say that the majority of the American people, the everyday man and woman, have been Christians, and you've seen America do a lot of things, even its missionary activities, building hospitals, feeding destitute people around the world. All these things have come from America and from the Christian culture. So I think a culture can be quite evil, or it can be benign, or sort of neutral, or it can be very positive. So I would disagree with you on that. And I think Christianity has been overall positive, but then there are fake Christians and psychopaths that call themselves everything from televangelists to pastors who also do damage. But anyway, back to your statement here again about the host and the parasite, and the parasite can literally cause, can be like a cancerous parasite. Is this true also in Canada? I mean, when you say the Israel and the United States, is it really like North America?
Well, I would first of all make one comment. The United States was founded in the 18th century, but it did not have an official state religion. And you must remember that it was George Washington particularly that did not want America to be founded on Christianity, because he was afraid of the prejudice that might be visited upon people who weren't Christians. Because don't forget that in Europe there was a lot of religious animosity. So America really, people who founded America might have been Christians, but the country itself is not Christian, at least not according to the Constitution or its history. But as far as Canada goes, we have a similar problem, although we don't have quite the same magnitude of a religious, I would say, insanity that you have in the United States. We have a government led by a man named Stephen Harper, who is devoutly fundamentalist Christian, and because of that, he is essentially in bed with the Israelis, to the extent that we no longer have a government. We have an occupation government. And to show how bad it is, in 2005, just before Hamas won the Palestinian election, Harper had a teleconference with three agents of the Israel lobby and promised that his government would oppose Hamas if it won the election. So we have this government of ours colluding with foreign agents in advance of Parliament having any say in what the country ought to do with respect to an election in another country. So in this country, yes, Israel basically calls the shots. Israel intimidates politicians. It's really quite a disaster.
But you wouldn't, I know from your perspective, you would call him a fundamentalist Christian. I would call him a Zionist Christian. You know, myself, a fundamentalist Christian, you know, perhaps unbeknownst to the public at large, is simply a person who believes in the fundamentals of Christianity. And Greg, one of the fundamentals of Christianity is following Jesus. And Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will see the kingdom of heaven. And so, you know, anyone such as Harper or Obama or Dick Cheney or George Bush or Bill Clinton, who have fostered war around the world, they can tell me all day they're any kind of Christian they want, but they're not followers of Jesus. You know, and there's been the Great Inquisition by people who claim to be Christian and all kinds of horrors. So I want to correct that. I don't see Harper as being Christian at all, and I don't see most evangelical Christians as being true Christians, or they would follow Jesus, because Jesus basically told us to turn the other cheek and follow the path of peace and all those things. But again, that's just a, you know, idiosyncrasy of mine, that I believe that Jesus should be listened to. And frankly, I have a Baptist, well, I guess he was, Greg, a friend of mine, but he put in his newsletter that he was of the, he actually said, what I would like to see is every Palestinian youth lay down on the pavement and volunteer to take a bullet to the head from the Israeli Defense Forces. This man is a Baptist. He's a, you know, you would probably call him a fundamentalist Christian. I call him a bloody Zionist Christian. So I'm probably more harsh than you are in that, Greg.
Yeah, probably. Although my book is not actually religious in its connotation.
No, it's really not.
It is unreligious, with which I would take a serious opposition to you on certain points. But I think best we should stick to the politics of Palestine, Israel, and how Israel has essentially co-opted the United States into doing its dirty work and turning Christians into agents of Israel.
How do you think that's been accomplished? I'm really curious of your answer here, because I'll be honest with you, I really do value your opinions on this and with your knowledge, and especially, as I said, I appreciate it because I know it has cost you as a journalist with quite a bit of brain power, and yet you mentioned the mainstream, you know, wants to shake you off because of the truth-telling here. Why do you think it is that a minority, for example, the United States, let's say 2.5% of the population, is able to so powerfully influence the whole government, the majority, in what is claimed to be a democratic country?
Well, the reason it does do it is because it is a minority. If you look throughout history at how revolutions, tyrannies, and repressive regimes take place, it always comes through a small core of dedicated true believers.
Mm.
In Russia, you had the Bolsheviks, which were a very small group of people in the Russian Revolutionary Party. You had the Nazis in Germany, who were basically some violent sort of idiotic offshoot of German society that no one took seriously for the longest time. So you have these people who are small, they're dedicated, and they form around themselves a cult. And that cult has a certain extremist view that appeals to people, especially to people who feel themselves left out or marginalized. Now, as you've read The Host and the Parasite, you'll know that in 1973, American progressive liberal culture reached its apex, and from there it degenerated quite quickly into a reactionary theocratic force. Because in 73 we had the Roe versus Wade decision, which decriminalized abortion. It also was the same year that Paul Weyrich founded the Heritage Foundation, which is the first Christian think tank. What happened in America was you had a coming together of various groups who felt upset at the populism of the 1960s and early 70s. These were left-wing Jews, very left-wing Jews, led by the likes of Norman Podhoretz of Commentary magazine. And you had right-wing Christians. They shared a common economic belief. They were anti-statist. They did not believe government should be involved in the economy to any significant degree. And they objected to the great society spending of Lyndon Johnson. These people also had a moral frame of reference that opposed the anti-war, that opposed the anti-war movement. Because many of them felt that the anti-war movement was a way to weaken America. And one of the worst people for this was Leo Strauss, who was a teacher in Chicago, Northwestern University of Chicago. And he believed that America had to stiffen its backbone or it would fall prey to fascism. But like many people who want to protect a country from a disease, they end up bringing about that very disease themselves. So what happened during the 1970s is that people like Ronald Reagan managed to gain traction as spokesman for a certain sector of society that was pushed aside by the progressive revolutions. And because of the Vietnam War, which had basically embarrassed, humiliated, and disgraced America, and because the war was prosecuted by the best and the brightest Ivy League geniuses that the nation could produce, a lot of people decided to throw their weight behind religious candidates, not educated candidates. And from Ronald Reagan onward, we had a gradual shifting away from rationalism and democratic government towards radical religion and authoritarian government. And we saw throughout the 1980s, as the religiosity became more and more obvious, more and more dominant, the Zionist Jews managed to find common cause, and they used that as a way, as an entree into the government. Now, Reagan did not appoint any Zionist Jews to cabinet positions or any significant positions. What they did was they latched on to their allies in the Christian right, got into government and policy-making positions, and managed to, as under the radar, we might say, infiltrate the American government. The other thing is that Christians and Jews have a common hatred, a common prejudice against Muslims. And this also united the Israelis and the Americans. Moreover, many Zionist Christians, I think all Zionist Christians, buy into the superstition that Jesus is going to swan back to earth one day, and that it has to happen when all the Jews gather into the Holy Land. And so many Zionist Christians support Israel's attempted genocide of Palestine. They want to kill the Arabs. They want to push them out just so all the Jews in the world can go back. This also unites the Jews and the Christians. And when you have a religious, true-believing clique running the country, they don't have to worry about rationality or policy decisions or right and wrong. All they have to do is believe. And if people believe them and support them and think like them, well, they will do it. They will help those, they will help them. And so what happens is, believe it or not, the Zionist Jews managed to get to power by using Zionist Christians as useful idiots in their attempt to turn America into a brickbat for Zionism. To this day, I would submit that the United States no longer exists as a country. Its policies are being made in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. They are not being made in Washington, D.C. Netanyahu can pick up the phone and call his allies in Congress, and they can dump all over the president in a minute with signatures on this or that letter protesting any negative comments about settlers stealing Arab land. Netanyahu has more influence in Washington than cabinet ministers. And this is the problem now. The union of Zionist Christians and Zionist Jews has become so entrenched in American society that we have come to look upon it as normal.
Well, Greg, there's one thing that I'm a little confused about here. There's no doubt that this union of Zionist Christians, as I call them, the evangelical community as a whole, and the neocons or the Zionist Jews, and they're collaborating together, certainly since the days of Ronald Reagan. But for the life of me, I can't see, you know, you talk about constructive progressive movement, which actually is nothing but a Jewish movement and has been a revolutionary Jewish movement in the United States and Canada, really since the 1890s. I mean, we go back to Woodrow Wilson, who was controlled by Zionist Jewish interest, who gave us the Federal Reserve and the IRS and the income tax and all those things. There we have a progressive president, a liberal Democrat, who lied and got America into World War I and resulted in the death of millions of American young men. And then you had Franklin D. Roosevelt. Who could be more liberal and progressive than Mr. Roosevelt? Again, a liberal socialist Democrat, progressive, if you want to use that term. I just call it socialist communism. But Roosevelt certainly bought into the Zionist propaganda spiel. And basically, we got into World War II because of the Zionist interest and the desire to create the nation of Israel in the United States. So basically, this whole century, I think the real problem with the Jews, the Zionists, was they realized they didn't control all of America because they couldn't take over the Taft, Lindbergh, Reagan faction. And so finally they came up with neocons. So basically you have your Trotskyites who suddenly began to, the days of Nixon. I think Nixon scared the heck out of them. And I think personally, I think it's very plain what happened. They realized they didn't control the John F. Kennedys, the Richard Nixons. And so they created neoconservatism, which is nothing but fake. I mean, it was the Trotskyites. It was the Irving Kristols, all of these people, basically who were, as you would call them, constructive progressives. And now they masquerade and have disguised themselves, as conservatives. And so we have this war wing, and that's what Ron Paul is fighting, this war wing of, Jewish, Republicans.
Hang on. First of all, I would never call Irving Kristol progressive or constructive. Irving Kristol was a nasty piece of work, and if it hadn't been for him, the Zionist occupation of America might have been delayed numerous decades. What I meant was that after the Vietnam War, the repressive cultural conservatism of the Eisenhower era eventually cracked, and the people that had been repressed or had felt that they were being forced into a very artificial socioeconomic role. A lot of people wanted their civil rights, and civil rights was a real problem. There was still massive bigotry in the United States, particularly in the South, toward blacks. And the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement, this was an inevitability. And the civil rights movement has turned out to be a very good thing for the United States. The problem is a lot of people who have basically a fascist mentality do not like to see the general public at large benefit from society. The tragedy in America, and perhaps in Canada as well, is that the citizen that we esteem as the great fundamental unit of society that votes and that gives value to elected government that chooses its governors, and that is the repository of everything good, is no longer the fundamental unit of society. It is the corporation. The average citizen is simply a cog in some economic machine that goes to work and is deemed to be nothing more than a factor of production. To a large extent, believe it or not, under the neocons, under the Reaganauts, we have become more Marxist than we have become American, because people are not treated as individuals. They are not respected as individuals. They are respected only as people who go out and spend to keep corporations afloat. So what happened in the 1960s, people wanted to be respected as citizens. They wanted citizens' rights, and they deserved them. Unfortunately, when corporations and corporations are the fundamental unit of fascist economy. Fascists love corporations. They're a corporatist political belief system. So you had to push back this civil rights movement, all these achievements that the people had earned. And this is what Reagan and, to a lesser extent, Clinton. Now, Clinton wasn't quite that bad, but certainly Reagan and George W. Bush did. Today we have to look at today in America and look what it was in 1964. You cannot recognize the country. And in my book, I state you cannot look at America before Reagan and after Reagan and look at the same country. Now, as far as progressives go, I would not consider Crystal a progressive or Podhoretz. The Christians and the Jews who were, let's say, Zionists, use that term, you're quite right, these people want to turn America into essentially an empire. These are empire builders. And you can see throughout the 80s, in the Middle East, for example, oil stopped being the prime determinant of American policy. It became support for Israel. And you can see the change with the movement into Iraq and operations Desert Shield and Desert Storm. So what we have here in America is a country that exists in name only and is merely a shell of its former self. I don't buy the communist arguments against Roosevelt. I'm sorry. I think that's a bit extreme. Roosevelt might not have been a perfect president, but he did what he could to pull America out of the Depression, which was caused largely by Calvin Coolidge, who took his hands off the government, let the stock market and the banks go completely wild, lend money, and allow the stock market to collapse. And that, of course, brought about the banking disaster of 1930 and all the banks collapsed. This is precisely what has happened now under Bush and Obama. We have learned nothing from history. Without regulation, without some government control over those people who generate wealth in this country, we will end up in the sewer. Countries cannot survive if greed manages to be the dominant ethos, which is what happened during the Roaring Twenties. This is what happened during the 1990s, and we saw the result of it now with the collapse of the subprime mortgage fiasco, the bank failures. And all of that goes back to the early years of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 1982.
Well, I'm not a Reagan man like the neocons are necessarily, but I will say this. I always enjoyed the fact that when the tragedy of 269 Americans being killed in Beirut, Lebanon, occurred, that the neocons wanted Reagan then to go in full force with our military, in which case we would have had sort of what we're having now, seven wars at once, back in the Reagan era. And Reagan said, absolutely not. You guys have misled me. I'm pulling all the troops out instead of putting more in. And, maybe that's why there was an attack on Reagan's life when the Zionist Jews wanted him to go in and he told them get lost. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. My guest is, Greg Felton. He's written a book, and I'm going to tell you about the book. And then when we come back, I'm going to ask Greg how you can get the second book that he's talking about, which is really sort of an encyclopedia that talks a lot about Zionist control of the media and many other things. That would be The Host and the Parasite. Greg, hold on, and we'll be right back with my guest, Greg Felton. I'm Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Tex Mars again. You know, I've got Greg Felton's book right here in front of me. And there are probably a few things you may disagree with, but I'll tell you one thing. This book is just a great exploration, would you call it that, of the Middle East myths. And it's documented with, I mean, all kinds of facts. What is really the truth about what happened in 1948, the Palestinians and the oppression of the Israeli? He talks about 60 years of Zionist terror and the Israeli lobby. And he basically says that there's no longer Israel and America. There's sort of Israel-America, you know, a combination because of the Zionist influence. And he does so in a very courageous way. I'd like to offer you this book. Jerry, what are we offering the book for? Is it $25? I think it is. Yeah, $25. Sort of a large format paperback book. Let's see, it's well over 200 pages. And I tell you, the minute that I read this book, I said, our people need to read this. I hope you'll order the book from us. And, of course, we don't really, we're not nonprofit 501c3. We are sort of nonprofit in that we don't bring in a lot of income here. So anything that you buy from us, you know, goes right back into the ministry, and we're able to continue our programs around the world and many of our ministerial projects. So we just thank you for being a part of the ministry. So please, Exploding Middle East Myths by Greg Felton. You can order it. Here's how you do it. $25. Add $5 shipping and handling. You can go to powerofprophecy.com and use your charge card or PayPal and get it right there on the internet. Or just write to us. Write to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. And say, text, send me Exploding Middle East Myths by Greg Felton. Or just say, I want the Middle East Myths book. The Middle East Myths book. Enclosed $30. That'll take care of all the shipping and handling. We've got enough copies right here in the ministry. And if we need more, Greg has assured us he'll get more to us. So please order the book, Exploding Middle East Myths. You know, there are not, Jerry, a lot of books like this. And you can't just go to Barnes & Noble, and, you know, the bookshelf's just loaded with books. There are books that are exactly the opposite, that are propaganda. And the interesting thing is that this book, the subtitle is 15 Years of Fighting Zionist Propaganda. So I highly recommend this book by Mr. Felton. Again, you can phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673, 1-800-234-9673. And everyone that orders this book, guess what? We're going to give you a free subscription to our Power of Prophecy newsletter. Okay, our Power of Prophecy newsletter. We just finished the special edition we got coming your way 1 January called Die, America, Die. Boy, what a knockout that is. It makes you want to cry. I don't even like, you know, Jerry, the title we put on my newest video, Die, America, Die. I almost didn't want to do that. You know, I don't like to think about America dying. And I hope we can somehow revive it again and restore the greatness that America had and make it an even better nation. You know, there's always room for some improvements, but boy, we were just devolving into a cesspool, a morass. And I believe this Zionist situation is probably the main reason why for our culture and our political system and certainly our economic system to get so bad off. Well, again, Exploding Middle East Myths, order it from Power Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. We call it the Republic of Texas. Or you can phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Okay? Now let's return to our regular program. My special guest, Greg Felton. Welcome back, Greg, to Power of Prophecy.
Welcome back. Glad to be here. By the way, talking about Lebanon and the Marine barracks bombing?
Yes.
Israel knew it was coming. Matter of fact, Israel knew within one or two places where this attack was taking place, and it deliberately withheld that information from the United States. Israel wanted America to suffer a major loss so that America would have a vested interest in attacking the Lebanese. So that was deliberately stage managed by Israel.
Do you think, Greg, you know, it's like Netanyahu, who sort of had the Freudian slip about 9/11, said, well, this is very good for Israel. Then he said, well, I don't really mean good. But he did say it. This is very good for Israel.
He did say that, and he meant it, because Israel actually was the one who was responsible for it. Now, you're going to get a lot of people who are going to go and pop their head valve, saying, oh, that's ridiculous, he didn't have anything to do with it. Well, we do know that it did, because Israel had 2 hours' warning of the attack. So how could Israel have 2 hours' warning of an attack if they didn't know it was coming?
Oh, absolutely.
How could people go on Israeli television, these five jumping Jews on the white van, saying that we were sent to America to document the event? Document what event if you didn't know it was going to happen? I mean, the evidence is all in front of you. It's not difficult. I mean, it doesn't take rocket science or a degree in structural engineering to know that Israel was behind the collapse of the World Trade Centers. It was done for the same reason that the Nazis accelerated the burning of the Reichstag building, the same reason that Stalin had Sergei Kirov assassinated. It's all because they needed a reason to accelerate a reign of terror. And in my book, The Host and the Parasite, which you can buy on Amazon.com, $27.95, in the book I argue, and I think I'm the only one to do so, that the Patriot Act was the true objective of all this. And the attack on the World Trade Center was a pretext that would stampede America into loathing Muslims and to whip Americans into a frenzy of bloodlust to do Israel's dirty work without question. I mean, the one thing Israel has to fight is the innate American decency, which is what Reagan had. I mean, he had plenty of faults, but he was a decent man. And that's what he could not stand, was to see pictures of children in Lebanon with their limbs burned off and just crying with heads dismembered. He was absolutely revolted by these pictures. And he wrote a stormy letter to Menachem Begin and demanding he stop. And Begin writes some nasty little notes saying, well, remember Zyklon B and the Auschwitz camps, blah, blah, woof, woof. And Reagan basically shut up because he knew that once you talk about the Holocaust, you can't open your mouth.
Wow. So in other words, they used the Holocaust as a sort of justification. You know, what did we, half a century later, what did the poor Lebanese and the Palestinians have to do with the Holocaust? If there was such a Holocaust, how could they be responsible?
Well, this is precisely what David Ben-Gurion said to Nahum Goldman in the 1930s. He knew it was all a sham. He's talking about Palestine, and he says, what does that matter to them? What does Auschwitz mean to these Palestinians? It wasn't their fault. We've come and stolen their land. Why should they accept that? I mean, Ben-Gurion knew that Israel was committing theft and murder. Moshe Dayan admitted they were committing theft and murder. This is not news. This is on the historical record. And those documents are either in The Host and the Parasite, or you will find them in Exploding Middle East Myth.
Okay, now back to The Host and the Parasite. You say your book is available from Amazon.com, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so they can go in and type your name in the search engine, Greg Felton, or The Host and the Parasite, and from Amazon.com. Okay.
Or also, if you want an e-book, I can send you one directly from home for half price. You can send it to gregf@gregfelton.com. You can send $11 for the e-book to my PayPal account, gregf@gregfelton.com, and I'll ship you out an e-book that same day.
Okay, some people want to do that. And again, we have Exploding Middle East Myths here. Greg, I wish we had more time to look into this. There's so much in your book. And by the way, I enjoyed both of the books, Host and the Parasite and this one. The Host and the Parasite actually is very interesting. It's a big format book, and that's why the price is a little bit more, just a lot of information you have in it. I want to thank you for being a courageous fighter as you are in this subject, and thank you for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy.
Well, I'm glad to be back. You can have me on any time, Tex.
Okay, my friend. God bless you and Canada as well.
Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye. You know, appreciated Greg Felton being on there. As you can see, we certainly have some disagreements. I noticed his book, Exploding Middle East Myths, he says in here that he doesn't believe the Old Testament is historically accurate. But, of course, it is. The Old Testament and the New Testament are, in fact, books of history and science. and are exactly accurate. So we would disagree on that. Also, somewhere in the book, I think there's a couple paragraphs in which Greg expresses his agreement with global warming. But as you and I know, global warming is a hoax. And I think Greg sort of bought into the what they call the progressive movement, which is the liberal movement. Here at The Power of Prophecy, we're just traditionalists. And we believe in facts. We believe in scientific evidence. And let me be very blunt about it. God is the father of all science and truth. And that's just where we stand. So I wanted you to understand that. By the way, a couple of things I wanted to talk about on the same subject. And I will say that I appreciate Greg Felton, because so few journalists are willing to fight this issue of Zionist propaganda, and he is. And just as, you know, I read the New York Times, and the 90% of the New York Times may be true. But of course, the 10% you got to sort of watch out for. And I know that you guys are good, what would you say, discerners. So the things that you don't agree with, Greg, about in the Christian front, as I don't either, well, you'll just discern what's there and what isn't. But I will say this, he documents so much. And that's why we offer his book, Exploding Middle East Myths. I like his concept of the host and the parasite, because I believe that Zionism is like a cancer on America. And Jesus talked about the man-made traditions of the Jews. And after all, it was those man-made traditions, their evil, sinister religion, that brought great tragedy to Israel itself. Jesus prophesied the temple would be torn down, and that the Jews would be carried away, would be dispersed. Paul warned that they were contrary to all men, and they are contrary. And that's why they make so much trouble in every community, every nation where they're at. That's why they've been driven out of countries. Not because people persecute Jews and are anti-Semitic, but because the Jews are anti-Gentilism. They're anti-Gentile. They hate Gentiles. Greg mentioned that Christians, by the way, hate Muslims. If a person hates a Muslim, they're wrong. I think that's wrong. That's evil. Okay. Now notice I said the person. Sometimes you can't really separate the person, but we must try to remember that Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, they are all people. They have flesh. They have blood. They have a soul, and we need to reach them for Jesus. We need to reach out in love to them. A lot of Muslims write me just hateful letters here, but I don't write them back hateful letters. I write them back letters of peace, of hope, of justice, because I want Muslims to know that Jesus loves them and he is Lord. And I think that, you know, that's the way Jesus would do it. Let the Muslims hate us. We should not hate the Muslims, but we must tell the truth about their religion. The same thing is true for Jews. A woman wrote to me this week. She said, I used to like you, Tex Mars. I got several of your books. I used to like them way back in the old days. But boy, this week I turned onto your website and you're nothing but anti-Semite. You're just an anti-Semite. You know, I can see it all over your website. So I wrote her back and I said, well, send me the evidence of that. I'd like to see it. You can't just falsely accuse people without the evidence. Now, what she was talking about was the truthful things I say about the Talmud, about Judaism, and about Zionism. To her, the truth is anti-Semitism. But the truth is not anti-Semitism. That would be like, you know, me writing something negative about Coach Sandusky, who obviously is guilty. He's been indicted for, 40 or 50 counts of pedophile behavior, raping children. I mean, there's witnesses that saw him doing it. And if I wrote an article, which, by the way, I did in the one January upcoming newsletter, about Sandusky, Coach Sandusky at Penn State, and his sidekick, Joe Paterno, if I write a newsletter about it, I'm sure I'm going to get some people write me, how terrible you are, you know, saying those bad things about Coach Sandusky. So, you know, people attack the messenger. Hey, don't attack me. Attack Coach Sandusky. He's the one that molested the boys. And I'll tell you what, I'm not going to quit talking about it. The same thing goes for Zionism. It has resulted in culture distortion, culture disruption. It has resulted in the takeover of America by billionaire Jewish interests who have no love of America. It has resulted in war after war in the Middle East. In fact, in World War I and World War II, we're talking about tens of millions of horrible deaths in the world. That's Zionism. The communists were Zionists. You have to understand that. I'm not going to quit talking about that. The Bible compels me to tell the truth. And you, dear friend, to tell the truth. And I can't play favorites. I can't say, well, I'm not going to criticize Washington, D.C., because those are Americans. They have to be wonderful. Our Congress has to be wonderful. They're Americans. Barack Obama was elected by the people. He must be a marvelous, wonderful, loving leader of America. No, he's not. And the sins of George Bush in killing so many people in unnecessary wars in the Middle East, it wasn't right. People will get mad at me for saying these things. You know what? I care. I care whether you're angry at me, but I'm not going to change for you. Here's the only way you're going to affect my changes. Okay, here. Here's the only way you're going to make Tex Mars eat crow, if you want to call it that. It's to write to me and say, Tex, you are wrong because here is evidence you have overlooked. Here is evidence that somehow you misrepresented. If you can do that and document it, then great. A lot of people write me and say, you shouldn't even talk about the Jews with their God's chosen. They're God's favorites. They're the apple of God's eyes. God is going to punish you. Did God punish Jeremiah, Isaiah, Moses? Really? The devil tried to take them out. The devil did everything he could to destroy them and distort what they did in telling the truth, but not God. And believe me, friends, if you are of God and of Jesus Christ, someday you're going to have communion with those great saints, the Old Testament prophets, the New Testament apostles. What about Paul? I quoted him earlier where he said, the Jews are contrary to all men. Does that make him an evil person? How dare you, Paul? How could you say that about God's chosen? God's going to punish you. Listen, he himself was an apostle of Jesus Christ, and he was compelled to tell the truth about the Jews. And Jesus was too. He told, our Lord and Savior told the Jews, Matthew 24. He said, the house of Israel is left desolate. Desolate. That's devoid of any value, spiritual, moral, otherwise. Jesus branded the Jews himself. He said, you are of your father, the devil, and his works you will do. Now, dear friend, are you going to criticize Jesus, who was one with God, who was Emmanuel, God, come to earth, and now lives forevermore, sitting on a throne in heaven? Do you think you can get away with criticizing Jesus for what he said about the Jews? You better wake up. Now, Tex Mars, I'm way down on the totem pole compared to Jesus. You can criticize me all you want, but it's not going to do you any good if I tell the truth. If I say evil of the Jews, then criticize me. Blast me from pillar to post. I'm a big guy. I can take it. Like the coach from Oklahoma State said a few years ago, I'm a man. I'm 48. I can take it. Well, I'm over 48. Those are his words, by the way. I can take it. He was criticizing the press. They had said something he didn't like about one of his football players. He said, he's just a young man. You shouldn't attack him. But I'm 48. Attack me. Okay. Well, I say to you, friends, attack me. I'm Tex Mars. I'm, as Jack Benny used to say, 39 and counting. But, you know, I appreciate so many of you who don't write and attack me, too. I complain sometimes about those who do attack me, but, you know, I have so many friends out there. Jerry, 99% of the letters we get are so positive. And they write and they thank us. You know, if we didn't have the offerings, tithes and offerings and donations from folks, we'd be long gone by now. You know, the money we get from selling things does not pay our bills. Jerry here works in the ministry full time. He's my engineer and he also does our website. What a great job he does, all the artwork and everything on that. But he knows, all the money we get on the website doesn't even pay 10% probably of our expenses. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about that. I thank God for what we do get. And it seems like we're so blessed. If 1 month we have a deficit, the next month it'll cover it. Then the next month, it just goes on and on. I'd like to do more, and if people would give, I could do more. You know, we could send out messages. We could buy advertising. We don't even hardly buy advertising anymore. We can't for our books and videos. And as Jerry and everyone knows here, Tex and Wanda Morris do not get royalties for our books. You may say, boy, Tex Morris is putting out those books and videos. It is true. You know, I work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, it seems like. But I'm going to tell you, I'm going to just confess. Actually, I enjoy working. I enjoy serving the Lord and telling the truth. How can I complain? God has blessed me so much. And when, you know, Wanda, she comes in and she takes care of the books and she says, okay, here, I'm going to give you sort of an update report, you know. You know, we're $12,000 behind this month. Like, I pull my hair. She's, but now I've got the good news. The Saints gave like $14,000. We're $2,000 in the black. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you. And that may change the next month because our bills are such as we, you know, get a new book printed or get a new DVD reproduced. You know, the cost of the manufacturer costs so much. But I'm not going to complain about God. You know, I met a pastor. He was from Louisiana. I was at Brother Otwell's church out near, you know, Lufkin, Texas. And I was one of the speakers. The other speaker was this pastor evangelist from Louisiana. And I noticed right away, I didn't know, I'd never met the gentleman. We shook hands, Jerry. And he said who he was. And his voice, it was almost like he was a retarded person. Well, you could tell, though, he was very intelligent. But, you know, his voice. My name is, you know, that kind of thing. So right away, you think he's, you know, retarded or something. But it's just that, as it turned out, he had been in a terrible auto accident. And he, you know, he looked almost spastic, the way he walked. Of course, he said for like 2 years he was in a wheelchair. And even now he walks very, very haltingly, and he has that voice. And, you know, I said, how is he going to give his sermon? I don't know how he's going to do it. It's so difficult to hear him. I felt very sorry for him. But you know what? When the man got up there and started speaking, I forgot all that. All I could think of was how gifted he is as a speaker. This man began to tell people, I'm not mad at God. I'm not mad at God for what happened to me. I thank God for making me the way I am. I thank God for blessing me and my family. I love God. And he said, I have advice for you. Now think of it. Here's this large audience. None of us were as bad off from a human perspective as he was. But he said, here's my advice for you. Don't ever get angry at God. No matter what happens, give him thanks in all things. Don't ever say, God, why did you do this to me? God didn't do it to you. Don't do that, he said. And I'll tell you, I sit in my pew with Wanda and just marveled. And of course, he said many more things. And you know what? I heard him perfectly. I heard him perfectly. In a sense, he was better prepared to give his talk and to inspire people than I ever could be. And I was delighted to meet the man. And he was a great blessing to us that night. So, you know, right away, you see, you make judgments. You shouldn't make judgments like that till all the evidence is in. Then and only then, make your judgments. But I was delighted for him to be our leader in his inspiring talk. Friends, it is great to be with you, and we have a great campaign ahead. You know, we're moving toward the new year, and I want to tell you, I'm going to redouble my efforts. Man wrote to me recently. He did criticize me, and oh, he blasted me, and he called me a effing moron, I think it was. I'm not going to use the word. I wrote him back and said, "Dear friend, thank you for the encouragement." Splendid. You know, thank you for the encouragement. And that's the way I feel about it. People encourage me. On the other hand, if a man writes to me and says, "You made a mistake," and he can prove it, boy, I don't like that, but I have to accept it, and I appreciate it. I've never been angry at a person for writing me, either way. Never. Never. And I don't know why I should be angry at anybody. I want to win them over. You know, somebody told me they loved going into this New Age occult church because everybody was so loving there. Said I went in this Unity Church, which is nothing but another New Age, you know, occult church. And they said everybody just went around hugging everybody. And he said, you know, I go in Christian churches and they don't do that. They're so clannish and all that, cliquish. And I was listening to the gentleman while he was praising this church of Satan and criticizing the church of Jesus Christ. And by the way, many churches are cold like that. They are. They really need to brighten up a little bit. They need to have the joy of Christ and let guests know of that joy. Boy, that's what I try to do in Bible Home Church. Let people know of the joy of Jesus Christ. But anyway, I was listening to him, and he looked at me as if to say, "What do you say about that, Tex Mars?" And I said, "Well, you know, sir, it is true. That was Satan's church you went to, and they will just love you to death at those places. But Jesus Christ will love you to life." And he looked at me and he didn't know quite what to say, but I think he was doing a lot of thinking at that very moment. But isn't that true? We have a new year. We have a great opportunity. We don't know when God is going to close the door to this entire world, my friends. We don't know when Jesus is going to come, but I do know this. We are the overcomers. We are overcoming through the blood of Jesus Christ. We have his testimony. And the book of Revelation says that is how you become an overcomer. Is it through your efforts? Is it because you're so talented, so bold, so brave? Well, that helps. But most of all, it's because you're willing to tell the truth. You're a witness. You give testimony of the power of God, even the prophetic power. That's right. That's why we call ourselves here the power of prophecy. And Jesus is that spirit of prophecy. He's the one that makes it all happen. There were over 300 prophecies in the Old Testament that pointed to the coming of Jesus Christ. And I don't know how many more. I've never counted all the prophecies in the New Testament. But I want you to know, if you will believe in him, he will guide you. He will lead you brightly and radiantly and vibrantly into the future. And he will give you opportunities to do good. And then we have the opportunity to make God proud of us by doing what's right. Thank you for helping me to fulfill my destiny and this opportunity here at Power of Prophecy. Thank you for tuning in. And my great prayer is that you'll tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.